This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending where you're at in the U.S. or around the world. Not sure exactly where you're at, but hey, guess what? We are up to over 100 countries, people from over 100 countries who are listening to the show and also watching it on YouTube. And I want to thank all of you. If it wasn't for you, this show would not be taken off the way it is. So first of all, do us a favor, continue to do what you do, and that is go to YouTube, Peter Caliendo, 100 plus shows, and hit that big red subscribe button. We really appreciate that. That's number one. Other than that, remember, all the shows are free. All the audios go right to Baseball Outside the Box, our podcast, which has been around for 3 years. That's baseballoutsidethebox.com. Check that out. And thank you again, everybody. And for all of you that are joining us on Facebook, thank you. We really appreciate it. Anytime you have a question, email me, caliendo19@gmail.com. Anything about baseball, anything about in general, contact people, anything about the show, love to hear from you. I love interacting. Don't forget, check us out on Twitter, @baseballout. We're all over social media. Check us out. We're always responding to what you have. We have a lot of videos showing examples of good things that can that happen in the game, some things that maybe you need to change when it comes to coaching. So check all that out. We love it. And also, last thing, Caliendo Sports International will be going all over the world. One in December, we're heading to Mexico to compete in some events there, and then also in August. So check that out too. All right, folks, guess what? Somewhere else around the world, you know, we love promoting baseball programs around the world, especially ones that are up and coming, just starting, that need the assistance, need the help, but they're still doing an unbelievable job. So I want to introduce to you, guess where we're taking you? You're going to say, where is this place? I said the same thing, so don't feel bad. Kingdom of Bhutan. Okay. And now Matthew's going to correct me in a minute if I said it wrong, because I knew I'd screwed up one way or another. I wasn't sure.
But that was perfect.
Was it good, Matthew? Between perfect. China and India, I practiced that. You helped me out. Let me welcome the guy who got it all started there. This is not an easy task. I have no idea. I mean, I do, but you're going to hear it, how we ended up there. What a great country, the people in charge, beautiful place to visit, I heard. We want to go there. I know ISG, we have definitely starting to help. We've already introduced Matthew to a lot of people, but I want to thank our good friend here in Chicago, known him a long time, major league player, Curtis Granderson. If it wasn't for him, Matthew's going to tell you about that. If it wasn't for him, I would have never met Matthew. And Curtis is so great. I mean, he just, since he was talking to Matthew, all of a sudden he said, hey, you know, Pete Caliendo does a lot of stuff around the world. Why don't you contact him? You know, he's so sharing all the time. So a shout out to our great friend, Curtis Granderson, one of the best guys in the big leagues, the best people on earth, period. Okay. So let's get going. Let's welcome Matthew to the show. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Thanks, Pete. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, sorry you had to listen to all that, but I got to get a few things in, you know, and it's interesting to let people know about the story, because this is fascinating. You know, when you contacted me, you know, through Curtis and all that, I want you to explain that. And then we'll talk about, you know, what you're getting into. But it's interesting how that happened. And now things are kind of snowballing little by little, because the baseball world's really has a lot of great people involved.
Absolutely. So we started baseball in Bhutan back in 2013. Bhutan's, so how familiar are you with Bhutan? I can give you a very quick brief on Bhutan.
No, give us a background. You gave me a background on the phone a little bit and on emails. Sure. Give us a background of Bhutan, the country. Also, but what I want you to start with, also not just the country, but also how you and Curtis hooked up and how that happened and got things rolling.
Sure. So, we started baseball in 2013, we spent a lot of years at the beginning really developing in country. And, you know, it was all started as a hobby by everyone who was involved. And, of course, we had the Bhutan Olympic Committee, who was very supportive from the very beginning. And we can get more into that later. But having them help navigate some of the complexities of everything from finding fields to gathering athletes at the beginning was very helpful. But you know, we started very heavy on the ground, and we built a program that became larger in interest than the infrastructure we had to provide for it.
Let me just stop you real quick. And sometimes I'll do this. I don't mean to, but I think because it's important. Before you get into the infrastructure of the how things are going on there, think about this amazing thing. How the hell did you end up there? I mean, put it bluntly. You know, that's the first thing, right? I mean, how does a guy from New York, Connecticut, that area there, you know, end up in Bhutan? I think that's very interesting. And all of a sudden you begin helping everybody there when it comes to baseball.
Yeah, so it was supposed to be for 3 months, and nearly 10 years later, I'm still in Bhutan. So, you know, sometimes things like that happen in life. But my first connection with Bhutan actually began in my childhood days. I went to a boarding school in Connecticut called Choate Rosemary Hall. Mm. And at Choate Rosemary Hall, His Royal Highness Prince Jigelugan Wangchuck was going to school there at the same time. His Royal Highness is the second son to the fourth king. And we met over sports. We'd play basketball together. We were on the same team for the campus softball league, and we'd play baseball together. And so that friendship is what led me over to Bhutan when Bhutan started to transition from a monarchy to a democracy about 12 years back or so. I started to help out with some systems work with the country, and ended up heading over to Bhutan for 3 months. And while I was there doing systems work with the government, I ended up spending a lot of my time on the field. And that's really what made me become very connected with Bhutan and you know, really, really fall in love with the people and want to stay a part of it all.
I'd say you're connected. You're connected to royalties where you're connected. I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's amazing. You meet somebody like that, and then you just never know in life who you meet anywhere. And all of a sudden, all this starts, this great relationship. Of course, interesting enough, you get there, you introduce the sport. I think that'd be kind of fun to understand. You know, how was that first experience? Did they already know the sport, or if you introduced it, what was the reaction?
Yeah, great question. So Bhutan was one of the last countries in the world to introduce television and internet. Television didn't come to Bhutan until 1999.
Wow.
So prior to that, but Bhutan is very, sports culture in Bhutan is very important. And it's in large part because you can think of Bhutan as, it's only 800,000 people. And for Bhutan has been very lucky in that we've had five kings, and all five kings have been very good to the country. And so it's a family, and everybody in Bhutan works together in a very strong way. And so, the key piece that I'm trying to get to here is that the many royal family members, including the fourth king, His Royal Highness, they're very sporty. In fact, His Royal Highness is the president of the Bhutan Olympic Committee. He's a member of the IOC. So, you know, there's a great interest to develop sports in Bhutan. And because the royal family is so sporty and athletic and wanting to get involved in sports, it grows that culture within the entire community. And so, basically to go back to how baseball became popular in Bhutan, you'd be surprised to hear that even without television early on when I arrived, there is this love and passion for Western sports. Mm. And a lot of it is due to the fact that there was no television, because there were cassette tapes, VHS cassette tapes of games that were passed around the capital city. And so all of my friends in Thimphu can tell you exactly what happened in this game of this World Series, or what happened in this Michael Jordan game to a T, better than most people I've ever heard of. And it's because, you know, these games have been kind of passed along through these cassettes and so, or VHS tapes. And so, you know, there is a very strong interest in Western sports culture, basketball, baseball, and of course, less Western, but football is very popular too.
When you got there, they were not playing baseball, correct?
They were not. No. So 2013 is when we started.
So wait. So all of a sudden, I mean, I don't know if they have cricket or not, but all of a sudden there's a bat, right? And there's a ball, and you're asking them to hit this thing. You know, what was the reaction? Because, you know, I've been all over the world, and when young kids see baseball, they get pretty excited because they like to hit something. You know, it's fun to hit a ball. But what was the reaction there? Because, you know, I remember in the Olympics in China, we had to train the Chinese, not train, but we had to educate the Chinese on the game of baseball in the Olympics because, you know, they did. Somebody would hit a foul ball and they would clap, you know, maybe thought it was like cricket, but so what was that reaction when you first showed them all this?
Yeah. Bhutan's a very, well-adaptive place for baseball, and it's because cricket does exist in Bhutan, but not as heavily or as popular as, say, cricket exists in India, its neighbor. And so while there is a lot of interest in cricket, it's not so fully established within the whole pipeline of the sports that you have players who say will only play cricket and don't have interest in baseball. In fact, when we started our adult league in about 2015, one of the adult teams was the national cricket team. And about half of them by the end of the league were saying that they preferred baseball over cricket because for various reasons, but it adapted very well. And then the kids are tough kids. The kids are, you know, they'll get on. We played the majority of, you know, our 8 years, we played on concrete, and these kids will play hard with hard balls on concrete.
You know what's great about that? We talk about that on the show all the time. You know, young kids who come from countries where they're playing in uncomfortable situations, you know, they need to learn how to adapt, get comfortable. Yeah, like you said, get tougher. Those are all positives because that the game, it doesn't, you know, I don't know if it becomes easier, but it sure helps because it's a, you know, it's a game of failure a lot of times compared to most sports. Now, what have you done? Okay, so you had to start something there. Did you just start, you know, did you just start getting kids to come to the park and the word spread out, or how did everything get rolling?
So we did no public marketing except for the Bhutan Olympic Committee telling a group of, say, about 50 kids about the program. And it just organically grew. So we were given the opportunity, and it was very nice of them, but through the Bhutan Olympic Committee and, you know, their help with connecting us with people. We connected with a high school who gave us access to their track and field. And so the track and field had two parts. It had a concrete section and a grass section. And we tried the grass section, but the concrete section was the better option of the two.
The ball bounced more clear.
The ball bounced better. The grass section, it was too hard to train. And so we started, and within, I'd say, 3 weeks, we had 400 kids.
Wow.
And it became a point where, and you know, we were playing 6 days a week, 4 to 6 hours a day. And the days that we weren't playing, we'd drive by and the kids were there waiting for someone to show up. So the demand was high, and it was a couple things. One is because Thimphu has 125,000 potentially of the 800,000 people in Bhutan, and it's a very walkable city. It's so walkable that a few years back there was even a law that one day per week you couldn't even drive in the city, and it was a completely walkable city. And so because you can walk everywhere, the kids leave school and Bhutan's still growing, and there's still a lot of infrastructure development in need. And so with that, there's still a lot of program development. And so there's a need for these extracurricular activities. And when kids heard about baseball being available to them right in the capital, they rushed there. And so that was very helpful. And the other thing that was helpful is the track and field is right near the where the Royal Bhutan Army families live. And that was very helpful because I think a lot of the kids there, they kind of kick around soccer balls at the end of the day or the track and field. And so we were kind of able to get big groups of those kids to come immediately, and then the word grew.
Another good thing I love to hear, because these kids are playing other sports, whether they're just playing soccer on their own or whether they're running track or doing whatever, you know, you're developing young athletes under the age of 12, which is detrimental to the game of baseball as far as long-term development. So love it. Now, did you begin to, I'm going to ask you in a minute about some challenges because nothing goes easy. But what are some of the things, have you started a league or are they just playing amongst themselves right now? Who's coaching them? How's that working?
Absolutely. So, and you're entering into the challenges questions as yes. you're asking that question. So, you know, we've had ups and downs, and it's all been progressively growing for the better. But we've had our challenges along the way, and you've personally helped me with some of them as well. So, you know, when we first started, we started as camps, and it was, we'd show up and we'd only train the kids for probably the first year. There was very little scrimmaging. It was just training. And, we didn't have enough coaching at that time. That was our biggest issue. It was myself and about two JECA volunteers. And then what happened was we realized that there was a need for coaching, and we realized that there were too many kids who wanted to play. And so we started an adult league, and it was a three-team adult league. And we played that for about a year and a half. That was very successful in developing adult talent and transitioning them over to coaches. I'd say that even to this day, we still have about eight of them who are active and responsible with it. And then we started to develop a concept for a team to go and play internationally. And that kind of fell apart a little during the time when there was the earthquake that hit in Nepal. But then after that, we reverted back to the children. And so everything has been youth since about 2015, and we were able to take that coach's talent. So we're at a point now where we have a strong, healthy program of kids, and we have about eight coaches who are very well trained and, but we still have room for development with coaching. But what we're doing right now, and this is to go back to your point, but we've had an adult league, and we've had youth camps with scrimmages, and then we turn that scrimmage into a more unofficial league where we'd have the same teams and they'd be scrimmaging regularly after we'd practice. But it wasn't an official league. So our big step right now, and this is the most progress we've been making during the pandemic time, is we've been working with schools in Thimphu, again, because everything's walkable, in order to set up the first interscholastic league for baseball. Now, it's not only for baseball. It would be the first interscholastic league for any sport in Bhutan. Wow. And so we think that that's going to be very impactful in building a nice model to show how new sports should develop.
Absolutely. Grow that sport in the schools, and you got educators in the schools. If you can teach them, you know, some things about the game, they become better also. Boy, you're starting to grow things. You know, when it comes to, and I wanted to ask you, I should have backed up earlier because I wanted to ask you about Curtis, how all that evolved with Curtis Granderson, because he was the one that kind of catapulted all this. By contacting, you know, myself with you, and then so on.
Absolutely, and everything you said earlier about Curtis, I'd like to mirror. I mean, he's been kind of a godsend to us. He, you know, we were very fortunate to meet him, and it was a, you know, we originally reached out to him because we had seen some of the other work that he had done in other countries, and you know, and his grandkids. Initiative, and you know, it was very obvious that he's very passionate about introducing baseball to the youth, and you know, and then as he started to introduce us to other people in his network, we learned even more how much change he's made and how much he's helped. We reached out to him a few years back, and he's just been an incredible advisor to us. He not only has helped build our network, but he'll have conversations with me and the rest of the guys about what we should be doing on the field to better the program, and he's a positive source of energy too. We've definitely had our downtimes, and he keeps our head up with his inspiration. So.
And speaking about downtimes, two things I want to hit on. One, the coronavirus, did that set you back a little bit? And two, let's get into the toughest thing sometimes in baseball, and that is getting equipment. I mean, you got equipment all the way. It's not like they make it in Bhutan. So talk about those two things, the coronavirus and now the equipment challenge.
Yeah, and there are a lot of rivers in Bhutan, and when you throw balls a little wild, they all go in the river, it feels like. So,
yeah, that's not a good thing.
So the coronavirus situation in Bhutan has done very well with the coronavirus situation. Bhutan should be in the news more than you've seen it for how successful it has been. It's been very conservative. The first case of coronavirus in the country, and tourism and the trade border shut down. So the country, took more interest in protecting its people than continuing to run economically. So there have only been two cases of community spread in country. And those just happened about a month ago, and it only infected about 18 people total. And there have been mass testing. I think per capita, I don't know if this is true, but I know Bhutan has tested a lot, but per capita, I saw a statement the other day that Bhutan has tested more people per capita than any country. So I don't know if that's true, but there's a lot of testing that's happened.
That's good.
And so baseball was being played until about a month and a half ago. We had a huge drop in the number of people who were coming to play, but we still had the programs going until about a month and a half ago, in which case at that time we stopped because there was more of a lockdown. And now we're slowly starting up again as of about a week ago.
How about equipment?
So equipment was a huge issue. When we first started, back in 2013, it was actually originally a phone call that I made to my brother and asked him to try to raise some equipment from local high schools, like in Connecticut here, there was one called Wilton High School, which was very helpful. But at the very early stage, it was really, let's just get whatever we can over there and introduce the sport. But quickly, as I said, with the number of kids, we were way over our head with the number of kids as compared to the equipment. And it got to the point where I was concerned because we didn't have catching equipment. We didn't, and we didn't have softballs. We only had hardballs. And so it became a situation where we couldn't do certain activities like scrimmages because I was worried about people's safety. Sure. And so, we became very lucky where we were introduced again through Curtis's network to pitch in for baseball. And you played a large part in that as well. So thank you. But we met pitch in for baseball, and they've been an incredible partner to us from the very beginning. They're very attentive to all of our needs. They'll reach out to us on a every couple month basis to see how the program's going and whether we need new supplies. We still have equipment needs, but the issue isn't actually getting the equipment. It's the shipping for the equipment, which we're still, raising funds on a case by case basis for. We haven't had issues with with finding the equipment. Pitching for Baseball has had everything we've needed, which has been amazing.
Yeah, and a shout out to Pitching for Baseball. They do this all over the world. We're going to put their website and show in our show notes with all the information. And thank you, everybody there. They've done a fabulous job. What's the challenge now coming up? You know, you've got the kids playing. You know, are there other sports that you're kind of competing? We always compete against other sports. What other sports are you competing against? You know, because you got to get kids to play. What do you do to convince them to play baseball if they're looking at another sport?
Sure. So I think the advantage that we've had over other sports is that we're very readily available and open to teaching newcomers. So there's a very, I think compared to other sports in Bhutan, the ease of entry for baseball is better. So Bhutan is two sets of sports. We have traditional sports and we have what we were talking about earlier, more of these organized sports that are Western sports, like football and basketball. And there are well-established leagues for football and basketball now in Bhutan. And by football, I mean soccer. So there's well-established leagues. With baseball, I guess our challenges right now. Very quickly. So there's the football and basketball, but then there's the traditional sports, which are archery, which is the national sport of Bhutan, a game called Kuru, which is a game of throwing darts, very long lawn darts. And those games are really kind of family based. So on Sundays you'll go out and have a picnic and play archery and darts and have some drinks and, you know, and play around shooting in these open fields. Baseball and football and basketball are becoming very popular because it's the first kind of, it's the kids going for themselves and they're going to the sport and they're making this group of friends through this sport that they can then go and walk around Timpu with and have fun with. And as I mentioned before, the extracurricular activities, sports is a very important piece to that. And so, so our challenges have really been, we don't have any issues with interest with the kids. For a while, one of our biggest challenges was coaching.
Yep.
And this is something that I know, you know, we've spoken very heavily about before, but some of the coaching issues we had at the beginning we'd be playing with the coaches. And then if some of the key coaches were not there, the other coaches wouldn't play or they wouldn't show up. And the question would be, well, why? It's the system's moving and you do a great job when you're on the field. Why aren't you showing up? And the response would always be, well, I'm not comfortable without these key coaches there.
Right.
And for a while, I really struggled trying to figure out what that meant and how to handle that. But I got good advice from you and others that, you know, the most important thing is to get the kids on the field and to have the coaches show up. And even if they can't coach, to have them supervise. And we started to do that. And, you know, all of those coaches who had concerns at the beginning about coaching are now coaching. And they're not supervising, they're coaching.
That's great.
So that was a challenge. And, you know, it was something that I think that we needed some people who had more expertise in the matter to give that type of advice for us to make that move. But that was something that I think we hit a roadblock with for a while. Our biggest challenges now are fields. We have issues finding locations. We try to stay off the concrete, even though that's usually where we end up. And we're in the movement right now to apply to form a federation.
Fantastic. So now you, let me ask you that, because first of all, folks, you know, we talk about this on the show all the time, you know, coaching, education, you know, that's the foundation of the sport. I've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it 1,000 times more. I don't care who, I'll debate anybody on this anytime. You don't have strong coaching at the younger levels. You don't have a foundation there. Kids are going to quit. It's not going to be a long-term goal. That's the problem. But the nice thing about baseball too, and everybody knows this, kids can play on their own, like you said, and maybe have some people supervise. The coaches can learn as even on their own as the kids are playing. You know, the kids will figure it out. And sometimes the body figures it out and how to do it right. It might take a little longer, but it's kind of cool to let kids learn on their own a little bit too. So you've got that. You've got the right mindset. Let's work on the coaches. Let's continue to educate the coaches. Let's encourage coaches to, you know, educate themselves also. With the internet nowadays, they can look at a lot of different things, even though there might be a little bit too much, but it's kind of nice that they educate themselves too. Then you begin some coaching programs, and I think coaches would appreciate that. You know, with today's technology, online can be done, especially a lot of people doing online because of the coronavirus. But now you've got other goals. Coaching obviously is one. You also were going to go internationally. We weren't able to do that because that's kind of a goal, because kids in the future, they need to see something to reach for, right? You know, is there maybe a potential national team or potentially go play in the States in high school or college? And there's always goals that you can give them later. So you need almost a bottom foundation and a top foundation, so that way the two connect. So that, I guess, like you said, you want to form as a federation with the WBSC will give you obviously a great advantage because they've got a lot of programs that can help you. So what are your goals also for Bhutan, you know, in the future here? I mentioned the national team, but go ahead and mention what you want to talk
sure.
about when it comes
Absolutely.
To that.
Absolutely. And you covered a lot of them. I mean, I think that we have a couple interests here. One is forming the federation. And that's both in Bhutan and internationally. We have close to everything that we need to officially form in Bhutan. We're lacking a little in about 2 years of funds that we'll need in order to really support the program until government funding kicks in. But everything else, player interest, equipment, coaching, organized league structure, or the formation of that league structure, everything's there. So that's one of our goals. The other goal is to obviously find somewhere that we can be permanently playing all the time, although that's of less importance to me right now because we seem to be doing all right, even though that would be hugely beneficial. We hope that with this interscholastic league, it will give us more access to fields that the schools own. So that's kind of our workaround until we are able to build an infrastructure. And it was a big point that you mentioned, and it's something that we disbanded to focus back on the youth. But we want to develop an adult program again, and we've had thoughts about developing it around the Royal Bhutan Army, the Royal Bhutan Police, and the Royal Bodyguard programs, because we want the kids to see something that they can aspire to and be able to go and watch their fathers play in a game and then go home and want to play baseball with their fathers and throw around a ball. So we need the two generation love for the game. And right now I'd say we have more one plus a group of maybe 90, other generation guys, but we need that growth where it's a two generation love, because baseball is a sport that you really enjoy to share with your father or your, mm-hmm. It's something that gets passed down in families. And so, we really want to build out that program because we want something where the kids know that after they're, say, in their young 20s, they can continue playing and they can play at a higher level. And it could be something that, you know, they can continue having a a social community built around it throughout their life.
Matthew, you mentioned the government funding. Right now, government funding, you're doing all the funding, the raising. What does it take eventually? Because you said something about 2 years. In 2 years, what does it take to get government funding in Bhutan?
Sure. So it's largely becoming a federation. Mm. So we have to become recognized by the Bhutan Olympic Committee as an official sport of Bhutan, and we're heavily on the radar. We've been getting a lot of advice from certain advisors as to how to best approach it. And baseball is the most prime and developed and next ready sport to become a federation. So it's really just kind of taking those appropriate steps to make sure that all of the right pieces are in place, and it's a proper organized structure that will support and sustain itself. And so the 2 years is really, we have, after a certain amount of time as a federation, government funding will kick in and provide that preliminary level of support that's needed to sustain the program long-term. It's prior to that we need to be able to support the program in order for it to reach that stage where that funding kicks in. So during the application process, we actually need to demonstrate that we do have that type of funds to be able to support the program.
Well, interesting. How are you raising the funds on your own? I mean, you've taken on here a unbelievable project, a great project, I think, for the game of baseball, but you've taken on a huge project here. How do you raise the money right now up till you get to the point where, the government will help?
Yeah, and it's been challenging. I mean, like any fundraising, it's challenging. We've had different approaches. We've definitely just looked to people in the States who either have a love and passion for Bhutan or have an interest in sharing baseball with countries that hadn't seen it yet before. But in addition to that, we've really focused on, and this goes back to, again, how are we developing coaches, and how are we introducing the kids to competition beyond what they've seen before. And so we're really exploring ways and speaking with groups to both bring certain types of, say, camps into Bhutan, where both the players and coaches can be trained by international experts, as well as looking for opportunities to bring the kids elsewhere and to be able to get them to go and see different competition elsewhere. So the funding doesn't always have to, there's a certain foundation of it, which has to be kind of set funding for operations on the ground in order to make sure that it sustains itself on the ground. But a large majority of the funding can also be in programs. And so we're focusing on the programs.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I know Curtis and I have talked several times, and I know once we're able to travel internationally, ISG, I know we want to come and help the coaches the best way we can. Obviously help the kids at the same time, but normally, our background is helping coaches all over the world. The other part of all this, Matthew, is, you're in the U.S. How does that work, the communication back and forth with your coaches? Somebody's got to be operating, the kids got to be playing, all the time. How does that work?
Sure. And so this is kind of an unordinary environment right now. I mean, normally I'm in Bhutan about 10 months a year. So this has been the first time where we've really faced this obstacle.
Sure.
But there have been two times when I was not in Bhutan for a long period of time. It was this pandemic, and it was a few years back when I broke my leg. And that was when I actually first identified, I'd say that was probably 4 years back, but that's when we first identified, hey, we need to make sure that the coaches can handle everything without me being there.
Mm-hmm.
And so those 4 years spent were very heavy on coach development. And I have to be honest with you, since the, you know, coronavirus has hit, and I've been in the States since March, it's nice when I'm there and coaching the kids, but there isn't a need for me. There isn't an absolute need for me to be there. The coaches do a tremendous job without me. So,
and that's when you know, too. That's when you know when you've done a good job setting the foundation, because that's what it's all about, right? It's all about delegating and letting other people be involved and be their own coaches and start developing a program there. You know, and I want to you have your coaching hat on. So it'd be interesting to find out with the kids there that are playing, what are some of the positive things that they do really well? Because you mentioned, you know, playing on hard surface, they deal with it pretty good. You know, because, you know, in the game of baseball, you might be strong in one area, but also you might be weaker in another. So I'm going to ask you first, what are they real strong in? And then we'll talk about some of the areas they need to really work on more.
Sure. And just very generally, the kids are tough. They're good players and they learned quick. I used to have a joke with the, you know, the adult team that we were training to go nationally that I wanted to face them up against them when, you know, when we were hitting ground balls to the adult team and I'd see three go by one of them, I'd put a pause on it and be like, I wish the 10-year-old was here to show you guys how to catch those. They're tough. They're good. And they, you know, and they're persistent, like they'll play hard, but what I'd say is, batting and fielding has been very quickly learned.
Wow.
It's especially, I'd say, fielding. Bhutanese are incredible good fielders. But batting too, there's some really good sluggers and really good, contact hitters. There are kids who just really have a keen sense of hitting. Pitching has been the thing I've always kind of been concerned about, say, if we went and played internationally. I think just seeing the development over time of the fielders and the hitters and, you know, grooming themselves compared to the pitchers, that's been challenging. And a piece of me feels like it's because they haven't seen international talent yet. And so, you know, seeing that competition might kind of stir a little excitement to focus more on the pitching, because we really have few guys who are just focused specifically on pitching. Everyone, you know, still wants to play a lot of the positions, which is great. But, you know, I don't see if I think pitching is something that we could be seeing improvement on the field.
Well, two things that you mentioned, I think, are real positive. One, you know, we mentioned it earlier in the show, and that is the mental toughness. If you've got that going, that's a big, big part of developing young kids and kids that'll stay in the game longer because they can deal with some of the failures. You know, and the other part is that the athleticism. If you've got good athletes, that's always an advantage. So if they're good athletes, boy, they can really develop quicker. And obviously the pitching will come. And as you start to develop more kids in the sport, you know, and coaches will tell you all the time, make sure that they throw really well, because if they learn how to throw really well when they're young, and you know this as a coach, it's a lot easier to teach pitching too, because they're already. So, okay, Matthew, let's do this, because two things. One, let's just finish it off with anything you want to talk about Bhutan baseball, but I also want you to tell everybody about the country, because you started to do that and I stopped you at the beginning because I felt it was important to talk about one thing there. But talk about both of those. One, the country, because you told me great tourism, great people, all that stuff. I want people to know about Bhutan, and then finish it off with anything else you want to tell people about Bhutan baseball.
Sure. So I mean, Bhutan's one of the only countries that's stayed sovereign for all of its time. It's located between China, just south of Tibet, and north of India. It's a land of 800,000 people, very mountainous, but very geographically diverse. You have the all the way to the Tibetan Plateau in the north. So you have super high untouched Himalayan glacier ranges all the way down to the Indian Basin down south, which leads to near sea level and, you know, very dense, rich jungles. You can think everything from tigers to snow leopards to water buffalo to elephants, wow, which people don't usually connect with Bhutan. big Himalayan black bear, everything. So it's a very geographically diverse place. It's known for its policy, which is, its leading policy driver is called gross national happiness. This gross national happiness was a vision by the fourth king, Jigme Singye Wangchuck. It's a very peaceful country, and tourism is very popular. I mean, it's a country that doesn't, it has a very different tourism policy where it's not trying to, bring in, mass tourism and a lot of traffic. There are actually controls against that. Mm. So it focuses on a lower number of people and more impactful and authentic experiences.
It sounds like quality over quantity, no doubt.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And everything in Bhutan will show you that, everything from the beautiful landscapes to the culture to the people. The people are amazing. And so it's a very special place to visit. And it's, for many of the kind of elite travelers, it's that final stop destination, which has been on their list from the beginning. So
awesome. All right. So finish it off with Bhutan baseball.
I encourage anyone who's interested to go to come. It's a beautiful place.
Sorry for the delay there. Go ahead and finish it off with Bhutan baseball. What else do we want to know about Bhutan baseball?
Sure, Pete. And we might have a delay, so I'll just keep talking with that part. But, you know, we want to keep growing in the capital city and beyond. There are 20 districts, and baseball has received some good popularity in the districts as well. It's been, during the Olympic days, sometimes it's voted as one of the most popular sports to develop. So while we're focusing on Thimphu right now, we want it to become something where the infrastructure is able to provide sports to many areas where sports aren't largely available right now. We've seen great excitement and movement in Bhutan. And now we're maybe a little too late, but in many ways it's good that it's late, because we spent so much time with grassroots and in-country development. But now we want the right people involved to really make this project something that sustains itself for the kids for the long term. And we want baseball to be in Bhutan from now until forever. So we'd love to be able to be playing ball in the Himalayas years from now with the kids as they're older. And, hopefully we can grow a network of people internationally who would love to do the same and come throw a ball around with us in Bhutan.
Well, I have a feeling that in Bhutan, we're going to see soon some kids playing high school baseball in the States. Then all of a sudden it develops the college baseball. And then one day there will be a player in the major leagues in Bhutan. You guys have done you've done an incredible job. What an infrastructure. You know, you've got great goals. You know that we're always here to help any way we can to connect you with anybody that we think can help Bhutan baseball. Listen, Matt, you can't ask more than that. And thank you so much, man. I appreciate being on the show. And folks, just so you know, we're going to have, you know, on the show notes, we'll have Matthew's information so you can get a hold of him. But Matthew, man, you're doing a fantastic job. Keep it up. And thank you.
Thanks a lot, Pete. And I really appreciate you having me today. And it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And thank you for all the support that you've been given and the interest in Bhutan baseball.
All right.
And thank you, everyone, for listening, too.
Yeah, and you've given us a chance to introduce Bhutan baseball all over the world now on the podcast. And, you know, that's special for us because, you know, we want to introduce people that are in baseball all over the world and let people know about special projects that are going on. So, again, thank you to Matthew DeSantis from Bhutan Baseball. And also, don't forget, thank you to Brian Crock, our producer with the Lineup Media Group. And special thanks to everybody in the U.S. and around the world who are either listening to the show on the podcast or watching it on YouTube. We cannot thank you enough. And again, remember, everything's free. It's all about education. And all we ask is that you subscribe to the YouTube channel, the big red button there. It's just one click. You get an update on all the new shows. Remember, we got over 100 of them. The audio goes on baseballoutsidethebox.com. We're always here to help you. Caliendo19 at Gmail is my email. Email me anytime. If you want to talk in person, just send me an email and we'll connect. So again, folks, thanks for joining us. I want to wish you a great weekend. Again, thank you to Matthew DeSantis again for joining us from Bhutan Baseball. God bless everybody. Have a great day. We'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.